Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back, horse stock is attached. Head is matted black, got the bushes black to match.
Plan for, before us calls for building 9 units. It's supposed to be 6 to 12. Looks like we're doing 9 units for 9 families who typically can't afford a house in the city of Pensacola. Well, I'm a strong supporter of affordable housing initiatives. This property has history I cannot ignore. As we continue to take away opportunities for indoor youth and adult athletic activities, the decision to demolish a community resource rather than rehab it for the benefit of 9 families is something I just cannot support.
So this is going back a little bit in time, but, you know, sometimes I play catch up. I always try to bring you the best version of a story. I may not be the immediate one the day after the meeting. I hope you understand. One person producing a whole newspaper every day is a little hard. So sometimes it takes time. But the discussion about the Malcolm Young no longer gym, because it was torn down, obviously. Charles Baer, what have I said more recently about Charles? If there's going to be a no vote, he's going to be it, and he is in this case. So the proposal before them, before the city council in Pensacola, was to, you know, approve the transfer of this land into the permanent land trust. I forget the exact name of it, but community for anyway, the land trust, where it's going to stay under rules that will make sure that whatever houses are built on that land remain within the lower end of the affordability scale so that they are able to be bought by people in the future, and that those people don't then profit off of the, you know, increase in value over time, that profit basically rolls back into the home itself. It's a really clever solution, by the way, to try to preserve affordable housing. It's something that the city's working on with a Habitat, and I think it's a really great thing. It's not the only approach, but it's a really good approach. So Charles Baer says, you know, look, he's for affordable housing, but, you know, he doesn't see this as being the right solution for that particular piece of land.
The last 2 neighborhood centers we've built are nothing more than event centers that put us in direct competition with the private sector, which is something the city should never do. Bayview replaced basketball courts with event rooms. Sanders Beach is an event center. If you haven't looked at pricing for events at either of those 2 centers, you gotta look. It might shock you. They're no longer venues for everyone, only a select few. The Theophilus May Center at Legion Field is run by an outside agency, as is the majority of the Vickery Center, which is run in large part by the YMCA.
So he's giving you a list of places that could have been some kind of athletic facility and were not. They're instead event centers, which he doesn't like because it competes with the private sector. I get that complaint. They're also meant for the people who can afford to go and use those spaces, which they're often for, you know, private events, costly events, whatever, very widely used facilities. And we do not have enough of those kind of facilities, by the way. That's why they're always being used. But also the places where we do have athletic facilities are for fee, you know, and they're controlled by private entities. And he's complaining about that as well. And so, you know, what does he want?
Athletics and leisure activities are critical for our youth and our adults. And our city needs to do a better job providing opportunities for all citizens.
Now, I would say the city of Pensacola already does a tremendous job of providing for that with its 94 parks and its, you know, many, 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 many leagues for all kinds of stuff. But Charles is talking about indoor sports athletics that take place in gymnasiums and that there's not enough of that. And I mean, certainly you could make the argument that that is another avenue of service that the city isn't providing enough of.
I was reminded today that a local group identified a solution to fix the Malcolm Young gym for only $239,500, which is $500 less than what my fellow council members are ready to approve to give for this project. They're going to get the land plus $240,000, which was approved by the CRA. I don't support this action that further limits our ability to serve citizens for the benefits of a few families.
Okay, so a lot of this is sort of complaint about the past, you know, that the Malcolm Young gym was torn down. We could have saved it for $240,000. That was heavily disputed at the time. The mayor and staff who did their own analysis did not think that that was true. And so the cost then of either resuscitating that building would be very expensive. Certainly rebuilding an athletic facility would be extraordinarily expensive. And so what's weird about all this to me is that Charles is complaining and hand-wringing, but I don't know what his actual solution is. Is it a $10 million athletic facility? Is it to go back in the past in the DeLorean and fix the wrongs that were done by them back then? Is it just to be the guy who votes no for no purpose because you're not really offering another solution with the luxury of knowing that somebody else is going to actually do the adult work of passing the right thing at this point with the land to do?
All right, seeing no other speakers, please vote. And that passes 6-1.
Yep, latter one. That's exactly right. Because, I mean, at this point, why vote no? What's the no vote for? You know it's going to get passed. If you succeeded, if you got a no vote, you know, if 7 people voted no or 5 people voted no, then what would you do? I mean, what's your alternative? To build something brand new on the land? With what money? So, I don't know. I understand the people who were frustrated about the decisions, how they were made, what happened. But it's kind of a, you know, legislation is always a, at where we are now, what do you do? And I thought that was kind of a, you know, you can make your complaints and raise your objections and remind people of the grievances of the past, and that's fine, that's normal, that's acceptable. But to vote no on the only reasonable solution available before you at the moment is a kind of a weirdly petty way to approach it. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right, we are still rolling accident-free and delay-free. I'm seeing nothing that's going to slow you down this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Add more road to your trip during the Subaru A Lot to Love event with a new 2026 Subaru Crosstrek or Forester Hybrid. Our new hybrids will keep you going no matter where the road goes. With up to 597 miles per tank, the Crosstrek Hybrid easily takes you to more places. And the Forester Hybrid sports a driving range of up to 581 miles per tank. Mileage like that lets you journey farther, and combined with Subaru's capable standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, you'll be able to handle any unexpected terrain with ease. Paved roads, gravel roads, just about any road. They're no match for the new Subaru hybrids. Get your Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid or the Subaru Forester Hybrid during the Subaru A Lot to Love event. Love goes the extra mile at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Driving ranges based on EPA estimated combined fuel economy and a full tank of fuel. Actual mileage and range may vary.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbieri Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
You don't need another money hack.
You need a plan.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights at 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for The View co-host Sonny Hostin and showrunner Brian Tedda for their obscene inclusion of Savannah Chrisley as a guest. Now, as you all know, the entire point of the long-running show that primarily features progressive women talking over each other to the point where no one can understand a single word anyone is saying is to present the illusion of free, open, respectful debate of news and issues of the day. I say illusion because the show has always been heavily curated to include an almost exclusively liberal selection of co-hosts and guests. Albeit there have been occasional token conservatives, especially ones who weren't very far to the right of middle, such as Elizabeth Hasselbeck, Meghan McCain, Abby Huntsman, and now Alyssa Farah Griffin. But they were always outnumbered. And the show made sure to never feature the strongest or best advocates of conservatism, which, of course, was the right decision. The whole idea has always been to pretend this is a serious exploration of ideas and issues across the spectrum, but great care was taken to be sure the spectrum was artificially limited to extend only from true deep rainbow wokeism on the left to barely just a hint of red across the center to the right, and always outgunned. And that's why it was such a grotesque sin to include a real-life supporter of President Never Ever Say His Name on the show, like Savannah Chrisley. Even including someone like her in the discussion is to validate the legitimacy of her and the entire MAGA movement, as well as to platform her for all the dozens of people who still occasionally watch The View. Well, luckily, you shared your outrage with Brian and Sonny and reminded them that The View is supposed to be a safe space for liberal-on-liberal debate, not liberal-on-lunatic debate. Including a you-know-whatter in this space felt like a violation, triggering viewers just by reminding them that there actually are such people in the world. As Sonny told the Behind the Table podcast, that's what The View is. You have to be able to sit with people that, you know, voted for him three times and support him and continue to support him. No! No, no, no! You do not dine with sinners. You do not sit down at a table with the enemies of freedom, democracy, truth, and tolerance. Our religion is based on inclusion for everyone, except for the people we really can't stand, and for them it's absolute exclusion. The entire idea of canceling people is that we purge them from society. We ostracize them with the weight of our collective social, economic, and digital revulsion. And it doesn't even make any sense to then sit down afterwards and share discussion with them. The View has a moral duty to not sit down with such people and talk. And they also have the weighty obligation to not allow their highly educational program to be co-opted into sharing the propaganda of hate from the other side. The whole reason for seeking to control information environments like education, television, art, film, and journalism, all the while pretending to be neutral and unbiased, is so we can suppress the erroneous ideas of the other side and exclude their views from positions of influence and power. So shame on you, The View, and shame on thee, Sonny Hostin and Brian Tedder, for failing to uphold the sacred power of pretend debate that we have bequeathed you. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, John Davidson, the Tourette syndrome activist who was the subject of the movie I Swear, which won awards for Best Casting and Best Lead Actor at the British Academy of Film Awards, or BAFTAs, last week. The reason John Davidson is being expunged is because of what he said at the event when Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo, two immensely successful African-American actors, were on the stage.
Delroy and I are delighted to be presenting the first BAFTA of the night for a vital part of movie making.
Now, obviously, I didn't play the actual words Davidson yelled out during the ceremony, but let's just say one of them started with N and the other one started with B. And now you understand the problem. A white man yelled out the worst racist slur you can say while two black men were on stage. And nobody did anything about it except, far too late in the program and far too weak an explanation by host Alan Cummings, later on that Davidson cannot control his outburst due to his Tourette syndrome, a neurological disorder that causes people to express physical and verbal tics, which can range from twitching eyes to snapping fingers to sudden head jerks or repeatedly saying or shouting words, sometimes even the very worst words anyone can say. But what to do about this outrage? If only Davidson had been black, this would have been so easy, since obviously the rules for black people saying that word are completely different from the rules for white people saying that word. Basically, African Americans can say it however and whenever they like, while whites can't ever say it under any circumstances, not even in condemning the use of it. So this would make it seem like an easy cancellation, but not so fast. What complicated this case, complicated enough to merit a level 4 review by a master wokeite of the Order of Lenin, Three Sickles, was the situation pits a disability person against two black men. In other words, it's minority on minority verbal violence, and that makes it hard to figure out whom to cancel. On the one hand, we never want to marginalize the neurodivergent, plus we actually have a soft spot for people who use profanity and disrupt gatherings. On the other hand, we never want to give any white person a pass for uttering that word, especially when yelling it at two black men. So given the challenge of disability person versus person of color, we sought expert counsel. The master wokeite ruled that ultimately, whenever Whitey might be in the wrong, you must conclude that Whitey is in the wrong, especially since in this case, Whitey is also a man, reminding us of the seventh principle of wokeness. Whitey is always the problem. As he pointed out in his 65-page ruling, the tie always goes to the minority. Race, gender, or sexuality outweigh mental disability. So woe unto thee, John Davidson. If only you could have been a black man yelling out the N and B words, that would have been fine. But that's the point. It's all your fault for having been born the wrong color. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to take a moment to recognize the great work done of the Central Standing Non-Binding Committee on Truthiness in Cultural Historical Revisionism for the guidance they recently provided on children's games from the last century. As has been observed, Gen X mostly played games that induce stress and tension, causing them to learn how to handle these states and not find them debilitating. Modern children, of course, are spared these stresses, which is why they tend to grow up fearful, triggered, and easily crippled by their anxieties. We've coddled them in incapacity by refusing to expose them to stress and anxiety. The committee's realized, however, that there is a danger posed by some older games, which, if young people were to play them, might actually help them grow into psychologically healthy, functioning adults. To avoid this danger, the following recommended changes are to be implemented to certain named games and toys. Operation. The game that punishes you for the hands that are not so very steady.
It takes a steady hand because if you touch the side...
Instead of a painful buzz, the game will henceforth announce in a gentle voice, "You are touching the sides. Please concentrate and try harder. But if this is the best you can do, that's okay. You're wonderful anyway, and we affirm you." Also, the patient will be wearing a surgical gown. Children sticking electrified prongs into a naked man's body is not an appropriate game. Don't Break the Ice will no longer feature a red man sitting on a chair on the little white cubes of despair. Instead, it will be a polar bear. And each time a participant knocks out a chunk of plastic, they are required to say out loud the name of one of the approved global warming phrases, such as, "Automobiles made this happen." "Leaf blowers are evil." "Cow and pig farts are killing the planet." "Babies are breathers." "Frackers hate Gaia." Or my personal favorite, "This is what deforestation does." Obviously, the polar bear drowns at the end of the game because we have neglected our environmental duties. Then there's no need to fix lawn darts, or what some people call jarts, because we've already rendered that game pointless by replacing the spikes with soft beanbag-tip throwable darts that just wobble around when they land in a completely harmless and unfun way. The high-anxiety game Perfection, which children race a ticking clock to place shaped pieces in their spots before the board game jumps up at you. Now the timer has gone away, since that is an ableist device that marginalizes the cognitively alternative who need more time to complete tasks. Also, because some children may find the challenge too difficult, the shapes are all the same. Since there's no timer, the tray obviously no longer jumps up at the end, so it's really just putting a bunch of identical pieces into identical holes at whatever pace the child finds suitable for his or their abilities. Jack in the Box is simply banned. There's no way to fix the problems involved in a clown scaring children randomly while the mechanism ejected his spring-powered form from within the Cube of Fright. The committee briefly considered allowing the toy as is, except by replacing the clown with an image of the current president, but the trauma of being surprised by any such figure was deemed far too stressful for anyone, particularly a child. Other rules changes are in the works for a variety of dangerously helpful stress games such as Hungry Hungry Hippos, Mousetrap, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, Cat's Eye, Jaws, and Dodgeball. If you'd like a ruling on any game that we have not addressed so far, endeavor, or otherwise traumatizing childhood activity, please submit your request for revision to the Standing Committee on the Use of Games or the QR code on your handout. We don't say bulletin anymore. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
There may be future versions with more attention to other games. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Okay, hold on. Let me get back to that screen. I can barely see. Let's see here. No accidents to report to you right now, nor delays. Everything is rolling fine. I'm John Pickens. I was having flashbacks. John Pickens with your traffic on the
fives. That's the goal.
Yep.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Hold on. I'm on the wrong page here. Let me just... boy, it is a beautiful morning out there, isn't it, Andrew? 67 degrees. Very nice. I'm just trying to kill time.
Well, I got other stuff we can do.
Now, here we go. I'm ready now. I had to click a button. It doesn't matter. The huge crowds showed up in Chicago yesterday to say goodbye to the late Reverend Jesse Jackson. Al Sharpton spoke as thousands gathered at the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters to pay their respects to the civil rights icon. Services continuing today in Chicago. Next week, they'll have services in South Carolina and in Washington, D.C. Pakistan has now carried out airstrikes against the two largest cities in Afghanistan. Officials from both nations say Pakistan launched airstrikes just hours after Afghan troops attacked Pakistani border positions. Pakistan's defense minister is calling it an open war against the Taliban. And Saturday Night Live is back on the air here this weekend after a brief hiatus due to the Winter Olympics. Hosting this Saturday is Connor Story from, says, Heated Rivalry. I guess I'm not familiar.
An actor I never heard of from a show I never heard of. I'm probably just too old.
Probably.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update.
You and me both.
I appreciate it. Oh, Beware the Whopper is changing and may have already changed. Did you see this?
What?
Burger King is changing the Whopper.
Don't change it.
Three key changes. Big changes.
It's beef?
Change number one. No, it's always been beef. That's not fair. Change number one, the bun. Apparently, they're upgrading the quality. Is that the one that upgrade? I know one of the things they're upgrading is the quality of the mayonnaise. So they're going to change the flavor of the mayonnaise. Why not? And it's no longer going to come in a wrapper. It's going to come in a box in order to preserve its quality. So there you go. The bun, the mayo, and box instead of wrapper. No more squishing the ingredients out.
From Gianna Gelosi, former President Bill Clinton is going to sit for a closed-door deposition over his ties to Jeffrey Epstein after Hillary Clinton testified that she has no information on Epstein's crimes.
Former President Bill Clinton was featured in several photos in the Epstein file, some showing him with celebrities and another one of him in a hot tub. He has never been accused, though, of wrongdoing, and Hillary says her husband ended ties with Epstein years before he knew of his crimes.
Fox's Madeline Rivera, the U.S. now investigating after the White House confirms an American citizen was among the four people killed by a Cuban Coast Guard during a deadly speedboat shooting.
Cuba's Interior Ministry claims the 10 individuals on board the 24-foot stolen Florida speedboat intended to carry out an infiltration for terrorist purposes.
Fox's Stephanie Bennett, America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 67 degrees, a very nice morning. We'll get our full forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's up in just a few minutes. Santa Rosa County Commission Chairman Colton Wright asking for prayers yesterday for deputies and first responders dealing with a brutal case. A Milton mother is charged with murdering her six-year-old daughter on Tuesday night. 40-year-old April Oliva allegedly stabbed Valerie Oliva over 20 times at a home on Noling Drive before stabbing herself. Commissioner Colton Wright said he talked to a deputy about what first responders saw.
I'm sure some of you are aware of a situation that happened recently. A brutal murder of a six-year-old girl, and talked to a deputy about it yesterday, and just keep our deputies and everyone in public safety and first responders in your prayers. What they saw and what they had to deal with was pretty atrocious.
Authorities pronounced Valerie dead at the scene. April Oliver remains hospitalized from self-inflicted wounds. She made her first court appearance Thursday from her hospital bed. A pretrial detention hearing is scheduled for next Monday. Wright made his comments right at the beginning of the commission meeting. Right at the beginning of that commission meeting. Senator Rick Scott making an effort to balance the federal budget. Scott introduced the Balanced Budget Responsibility Act yesterday. He said that would provide the president with the authority and discretion to curb wasteful government spending and balance the federal budget. The bill gives the president the discretion to not spend money if the government is operating under a deficit. Scott does say the bill protects essential programs like Medicare and Social Security. He says we owe it all to the American people. Jay High School's Lady Royals basketball team is playing for the state championship today. The first time in nearly 30 years, Santa Rosa Commissioner Red Rowell congratulating the team yesterday after they defeated Hilliard in the semifinals.
That game will be against Williston on Friday at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville. So our girls, our community, you know, all of Santa Rosa County's excited and proud of how these guys have represented themselves all year. And we just pray for safe travels for all the North End residents.
The championship game is being played today at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville. Commissioner Bobby Burkett also praising students from across the county for excelling in sports this year, including the Lead Academy and Pace's weightlifting team. Escambia County Public Schools holding its third annual Podcast-a-Palooza event. And that's going to happen tomorrow at Booker T. Washington High School. The free event runs from 10 o'clock tomorrow morning until 1 in the afternoon. There'll be vendor booths covering scholarships, mental health resources, summer camps, and tutoring opportunities. And Pensacola Beach lifeguards are headed back to their towers tomorrow. Casino Beach will be staffed daily from 8:30 in the morning until 5:30 in the evening. The crew includes 10 new lifeguards and 65 returning guards who've completed more than 60 hours of open water and emergency training. Last season, lifeguards performed 359 rescues and responded to 130 major medical incidents. Full summer staffing of up to 8 towers begins on Memorial Day weekend. 6:35 at News Radio, John Pickens has our traffic on the fives.
That's right. We're still rolling accident-free and delay-free. Not seeing anything to slow you down. Good job on that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be dealing with a chance of some showers through the morning hours, 70% chance of rain, high near 72 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 55. For Saturday, mostly sunny skies, high near 71. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 56. Heading into Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high near 72. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 57. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It's 67 degrees right now, cloudy skies. Our next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Investors are anticipating the release of January's Producer Price Index, a measure of wholesale inflation. Economists polled by Dow Jones see the headline reading coming in at 0.3%, while core PPI, which excludes energy and food prices, is also anticipated to land at 0.3%. Data drops at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Nintendo is expanding the footprint of its valuable intellectual property across movies to merchandise and theme parks. The gaming giant is betting on nostalgia and new gamers to drive sales of its flagship Switch 2 console and key games. The original Switch became Nintendo's best-selling console of all time. Slightly more Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week as layoffs remain at relatively healthy levels. The Labor Department reports the number of Americans filing for jobless aid for the week ending February 21st rose by 4,000 to 212,000 from the previous week. Futures are moderately lower ahead of inflation data coming out later this morning. That's Your Money Now.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You sort through tons of resumes and you get too many so-so applicants. You're just waiting for someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now there's a place where you can meet them fast. ZipRecruiter.
Need to hire right away. Start your search for strong candidates. The right fit awaits. Build your team, build it sooner. Need your match on ZipRecruiter.
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. And you're on your way to meeting your match. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So try it now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter. Try it free.
Ladies, join us to be the impact in 2026. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, a women's organization that has given over $18 million to nonprofits right here. Meet other members and hear about the impact our funding has made at meet and mingle sessions through mid-February. Women 18 and older are invited to join us by March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org. That's impact100pensacola.org.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
No opinions, no arguing, just the news right now.
Right now.
Chris Bryant, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Austin Price for News Radio 92.3.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Members, we're going to take a pause in the action. The budget chair is going to update us on the status of his report. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Looks like we're not going to conference this weekend. I intend to go home tomorrow, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for that report.
This was killing me yesterday when I was listening to the rest of the House floor debate, all 11 hours of it, good Lord, from Wednesday. But as you hear them, they sounded, it reminded me of in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know, when, and there was much rejoicing. That's what it sounded. It was like satirical cheering. And so what does that mean exactly? Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2 in his last session. Budget not conferencing this weekend between the House and the Senate. Alex, welcome back to the show. What does that mean?
Hey, good morning, Andrew. So what that means simply is that the House and the Senate have not agreed on the amount of revenue we're going to take in next year, meaning our tax package, right? So we have to agree on the revenue, the net revenue we're going to collect next year. And then we also have to agree on the top line dollar amounts, essentially like for the overall budget and per silo. So like for me and my Senate counterpart, Jay Trumbull, to negotiate a healthcare budget, we have to know, are we working with, you know, $53 billion, $56 billion? And so those numbers have to be agreed to before we can get into the nitty-gritty detail of, like, negotiating every line. So really all that meant was that we haven't finalized those things, but we also, you know, we have time. If we had started conferencing this week, it would have been considered early. So it's not necessarily out of the order, out of the ordinary to not have begun conferencing this weekend. What is somewhat out of the ordinary is that there's a sense that we can't even agree on top line numbers yet. Mm. That feels a little bit out of the ordinary.
Within silos, I mean, obviously, if the big number doesn't match, the little numbers aren't going to match either. But is it sort of all the silos, one or two of the silos? Where's the discrepancy, or do you even know?
I think that there's no one place where there's a discrepancy, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe there is in negotiations between the Speaker and the President, but, you know, it's normally, it's all in flux until they can agree on everything.
Okay.
You know, it's a complete back and forth, offer back. So, I don't know if there's a revenue holdup on our tax package or what.
I guess you and I maybe had never talked about this exactly or never occurred to me, but let's say you and Jay Trumbull in the, you know, healthcare silo, you come back with a number of $55 billion. You have 54 and he has 56. Okay. Well, then you have projects within that. You have to negotiate the details, right? Cause the sum total of the details is what matters. How do you do that? That seems like a very complicated task because I'm assuming that some of your priorities match up A, B, C, and some of your priorities do not match up, and which things do and don't get and which get how much funding. That just sounds like a very complicated. I know it happens every year, but as I'm thinking about this, it just seems like a very difficult thing to accomplish, not just for you, but for any of those silos.
Well, it is complicated, right? Because there are some things that, you know, the appropriations chair, the speaker may care very much about in my budget that I can't really give much on. And there's some things that the Senate president and the Senate Appropriations Chair care about, and then there's everything else, right? So as a subcommittee chair overseeing this one specific budget, it's my job just to be informed about it as much as I possibly can in healthcare about every line, to be able to advocate and give everyone around me confidence that the product that we'll have is the best possible and is backed up by the most justification. So, yeah, we do it every year. We have assistance from, staff members who are brilliant with a ton of institutional knowledge. But yeah, it's a complex negotiation.
One of the other things, you know, you guys did a lot on the floor this week. One of the things I think was the voter eligibility package, changing so that only what state issued IDs are legitimate. For example, like student IDs would not qualify for voter citizenship validation. Is that right?
Yes. So it's essentially like the state's version of the SAVE Act if Congress isn't going to be passing it.
Then we're going to do it here at the state level. Okay, very good. You also passed the Guardian bill. We were talking about that earlier, and we'll come back to that next hour. Michelle Salzman's bill to basically take the K-12 Guardian program and expand it to post-secondary while also allowing teachers, or what you would call professors, adjuncts, TAs, to become guardians and carry in the classroom if they go through all the things. So that's a pretty dramatic change. I thought that it was funny the way the Democrats raised all their objections, and then you guys basically didn't debate, just voted on it. Said, okay, we don't care. We're doing it.
I mean, it passed. It's new. We'll see what the Senate does.
Does the Senate even have this on their agenda? I mean, because I know you guys have been trying. The House has always been more permissive about guns, and the Senate's always been the one that waffled on this stuff. So do you expect this to go anywhere in the Senate, or where is it? I haven't checked.
I don't know. I can double check really quickly to see if it has.
I'll look up while we're talking about other things. That's fine. We'll see what we can figure out. We're talking to Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you. It looks like I-10, I-110, Highway 90, 29, 98 are all rolling smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Alex Andrade. As I know, we are both furiously checking our lines. We have... CS for Senate 896 has been heard one time by the Appropriations Committee, and that's all the actions that I can find. So slow if no movement in the Senate, which means probably it's not going anywhere, unfortunately. Okay, fair enough. Is that what you found, Alex? I know you're faster than I am.
Well, I actually see that it's been heard in two committees.
Oh, all right.
So we'll see. So the House bill, once it got sent over in messages, it was immediately referred to Rules. I don't know if that referral will stick. If it does, then it probably can't be picked up on the Senate floor immediately. And I don't know if Rules is meeting again, but I could not tell you. You'd have to ask either. I guess you'd have to ask Senator Gates or Representative Salzman on if that Rules referral is going to stick.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. Some of the other things going on this week, you had kind of a fun week. you got the, it's not titled this, but I'll call it the James Uthmeyer Rebuke Bill passed unanimously. That's the one that, had it been in place at the time, would have made the $10 million side shuffle of money to Hope Florida Foundation from Centene instead of to ACA for the purposes of political action campaigning, would have made that illegal. Pretty interesting that it got unanimous support.
I'll be the first to tell you, I think that our current criminal statutes on things like organized schemes to defraud and money laundering already applied to the circumstances. But at least this would definitively say, if you take money off the top, if you shave money off of a state settlement, money owed to the state, and divert it, you are committing a crime against the state. So you don't have to go through all the machinations that James and his friends have gone through saying, oh, well, this was justified for X or X or X, or arguing about whether or not it was or wasn't Medicaid money. You can't take money off the top from money owed to the state. Sorry. You know, every person in Florida would understand, like, employees of a corporation can't take money owed to that corporation without telling the corporation. You know what I mean? It's a pretty simple premise, but at least this would spell out that in this circumstance, it doesn't matter any other criminal statute, this in and of itself, just doing that, regardless of where the money goes, would be criminal.
And you also had a portion of that bill. There were two elements of it. One was prohibiting the transfer, but also second, 10-day mandatory reporting of any payments to come, so that you, as the government oversight, the corporation, as you say, is actually informed of the money coming. And again, those are very obvious things. But just to clarify, over-clarify almost, that this is what's going to happen. Is that bill running in the Senate? Are we going to see a companion in the Senate?
No. I'm looking to see if there's any, because the language was never even filed, like that portion of the bill, the rest of my bill related to ethics and conduct and fundraising from your official position was filed, but the portion about James and what he did, it is not in any Senate bill. So essentially that means, based on our rules of procedure, that it could be in play on another bill. So we'll see if I can work it on somewhere. But the Senate has been very clear that they don't want to do anything at all to even remotely offend the governor or the executive. And unfortunately, that means that they're comfortable not knowing if James is engaging in statewide settlements right now and taking money out of them.
You know, speaking of that, just as a note, we found out yesterday that, you know, because the grand jury that had been impaneled related to all of this has been meeting and we hadn't heard anything. There was reporting yesterday that there has been a presentment that the grand jury has issued something, but it's being held from the public because there's a legal challenge to it, apparently. And literally at this time, that's all we know. We don't know who, we don't know what, we can't really talk about it because we don't know anything. But just kind of, you know, we're all waiting to find out, you know, what is this going to really mean for the future? One of the other bills that I thought you raised a good question about was about the counterterrorism, counterintelligence bill and the breadth of language in that bill, which would seem to indicate that anybody who is politically adverse to the state, whatever that means, might potentially be surveilled for the purpose of finding pretext to arrest them. Other elements of that bill to prevent terrorism make perfect sense to me, but that part of the language you objected to, you were the only Republican to vote against it. Do you have confidence that the language will be changed in the amendment that they said is forthcoming?
I could not tell you if the bill is going to move past that committee, Andrew. What I can say is that it caused me a lot of concern, not just the definition of who could be targeted, because the definition was so extremely broad that it would involve, you know, anybody with a viewer opinion that, say, James Uthmeyer subjectively believed was, against the state.
Right.
So he could deem my opinion that voters should decide on ballot amendments without interference with some state resources. He could deem that inimical to the state and then put a task force on me to surveil me without any warrant or legal justification. And that was a pretty serious concern.
Weirdly, even context, like even your opposition to this bill under this bill would seem to include your opposition as a pretext for surveillance because, you know, the state's trying to accomplish a thing and there you are standing in the way of it, right? How dare you?
Right. There's the two components, like the activity permitted is very vague and broad. Like in addition to making arrests, which is in there, it also said reveal their intent to compel a response using counterintelligence methods and tradecraft. I could not get a definition of what that meant. What it seems to mean is we can, you know, lie to you. We can dress up as fake telephone operators and spook you. We can, I have no idea what that contemplates. Right. And I don't think anybody else does either. So, just because like it's so broad and encompasses everything and would allow for some aggressive abuses, based on people's, right now, at least based on people's opinions and viewpoint, like I could not vote for it.
Finally, you did have a moment. You're in your last term. Obviously, you're going to be giving a speech on the floor here pretty soon. You had a human breakdown moment at the very end of your last budget subcommittee hearing. I want to listen to it for a second.
So I know I only have a few more weeks here before I term out, but hopefully you guys can continue to build on that and do a better job than I could have in the last few years. And I'm excited to see what everyone here achieves. So thank you.
So far, pretty safe, but
with that, unless anyone has anything to say, this concludes our subcommittee agenda. And Representative Renato moves her eyes.
Now, I said yesterday I thought this was adorable and very human, and I loved it. But now I think back, was that because there were so many protesters in the meeting?
So many protesters, Andrew. So many protesters.
I mean, I know the Attorney General and his folks, you know, or at least his folks, whether he was involved or not, you know, they went out of their way to get protesters at your meeting on the basis of false allegations and then a prayer vigil they were going to have at their office. Was it all the protesters that made you so emotional?
No. Thankfully, once everybody realized James was lying to them, no one even showed up to his prayer vigil he offered to hold at 3:30. But
poor guy.
But as I was saying goodbye, I was you know, looking at the staff and looking at the members of that committee. I mean, that committee, you know, had to go through something that, you know, no committee has really had to go through in the past 8 years. You know, this committee was the group of representatives that, you know, we all were part of that, you know, those hearings last year where all this is uncovered. And so it's just a great group of representatives. Like, I'm extremely proud and appreciative of them. You know, it's really easy for politicians to still, like, you know, glad hand and be buddy-buddy with Uthmeyer and, you know, the other folks that are defending or trying to excuse the conduct. And, you know, this group, you know, they stood, you know, they were loyal to the truth. They were faithful to the truth. They stuck by it, and they had my back. And that's not something I could say for every single House member, right? But
yeah, that's powerful. You know, and you're right. I mean, so, you know, you've been through the battle with some folks. Not everybody had your back. Some people really did. And I think thinking over that over the time that it's been, I can imagine why that was powerful. And again, I thought it was, we both, John and I both kind of celebrated them, and we thought that it was amazing. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for the time. We'll look forward to talking again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you, nor delays. It looks like Highway 29, 90, 98 are all flowing smoothly. John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, if you wake up in the morning feeling great and refreshed, I mean, wonderful, okay? But if you wake up in the morning feeling like, oh, I don't know if I can even get myself out of bed because of these aches and pains and joints and pressures and headaches and like, okay, chances are good you've got not the right bed. You need a better bed. And listen, having the right bed for you, not the bed you think you're supposed to have, but the bed that really is the right one for you, can make all the difference in the world so that you go to bed tired and wake up refreshed instead of going to bed, you know, tired and waking up worse. That's not the idea. Well, go to the Sleep Center. You know, they've been around for 30 years. They are the local place. They are the place that people go to. But if you don't know, you can think like, well, all mattress places are the same. They're not. Locally owned, locally operated, best selection, best service, best price, literally compare, you'll find. No commission, so there's no pressure. You can shop to your heart's content. And they understand. You know, a lot of other places try to imitate them, and they also understand that most people don't really want to go shopping for a mattress because of bad experiences. Well, they try to avoid that. They try to make it easy, and they want to help you get that great night's rest. So, if you have been hurt by a mattress or hurt by a mattress store, go to the Sleep Center on the north side of Creighton, just east of Davis.
Investing in times like these can be scary. If you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances, Armada Advisors will put you on the right path to success. Coming up at 9 a.m. after the Pensacola Morning News, be sure to join Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors to find a better way for you to successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement. That's Monday at 9 after Pensacola Morning News on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Raise your glass as Wine on the Water, the Grand Tasting, returns to Wahoo Stadium on Saturday, March 7th. Enjoy fine wines, craft beers, and gourmet bites from Pensacola's top chefs, all set against the stunning backdrop of Pensacola Bay. Don't miss live entertainment and a croquet and rosé tournament, plus breathtaking sailing. Get your tickets now at givesacredheart.org. That's givesacredheart.org.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week.
The Pensacola Runners Association presents the Bay to Breakfast Trail Run Saturday morning. Enjoy the beauty and challenge of an 8K trail run and breakfast after the run. See runsignup.com. Friday through Sunday, check out the Pensacola Dog Fanciers annual dog show at the Escambia County Equestrian Center. Enjoy the show, displays, and the health clinic. See PensacolaDogs.org for more. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
You're not looking for an argument. You just want to know what's going on.
And that's a good thing.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
We'll embrace it. 659 News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. Former President Bill Clinton was being grilled by a House committee yesterday. Of course,
Hillary yesterday.
Or Hillary yesterday, Bill today. I'm sorry about that. Good night. What's going on with this computer? The FAA shutting down airspace near the Texas-Mexico border after the U.S. accidentally shot down one of its drones. The Pentagon reportedly used an anti-laser drone system yesterday to shoot down a drone belonging to Customs and Border Patrol.
You're listening to